Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritam Param Charam Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Dato Jayamudirayat Nastaprayeshu Abhadresh Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Tamashtoke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, 24th Chapter, 27th Text. Irudo Vacha Yuyam Vedishada Putra Yuyam Vedishada Putra Yuyam Vedishada Putra
Yuyam Vedishada Putra
Viditam Vaschikirshitam
Viditam Vaschikirshitam
Viditam Vaschikirshitam
Viditam Vaschikirshitam
Anugrahaya Bhadramba
Anugrahaya Bhadramba
Anugrahaya Bhadramba
Anugrahaya Bhadramba
Evam me darshanam kritam
Evam me darshanam kritam
Evam me darshanam kritam
Evam me darshanam kritam
Shri Rudra Vacha
Shri Rudra Vacha
Yuyam Vedishada Putra Viditam Vaschikirshitam Anugrahaya Bhadramba Evam me darshanam kritam Virudaro Vacha Yuyam Vedishada Putra Viditam Vaschikirshitam Anugrahaya Bhadramba Eva me darshanam kritam Shri Rudra Vacha Yuyam Vedishada Putra Viditam Vaschikirshitam Anugrahaya Bhadramba Eva me darshanam kritam Shri Rudra Vacha Yuyam Vedishada Putra Viditam Vaschikirshitam Anugrahaya Bhadramba Eva me darshanam kritam
Shri Rudra Vacha
Yuyam Vedishada Putra Viditam Vaschikirshitam
Anugrahaya
Bhadramba
Eva me darshanam kritam
Shri Rudra Vacha Yuyam Vedishada Putra Viditam Vaschikirshitam Anugrahaya Bhadramba Eva me darshanam kritam Virudra Uvacha Yuyam Vedishada Putra Viditam Vaschikirshitam Anugrahaya Bhadramba Eva me darshanam kritam Rudra Vacha Yuyam Vedishada Putra Viditam Vaschikirshitam Anugrahaya Bhadramba Eva me darshanam kritam Shri Rudra Vacha
Lord Shiva began to speak.
Yuyam,
all of you,
Vedishadaha of King Prachinabhari, Putraha, sons, Viditam, knowing, Vaha, your, Chikirshitam, desires, Anugrahaya, for the matter of showing you mercy. Padram, all good fortune unto you. Vaha, all of you. Evam, thus. May, my. Darshanam, audience. Kritam, you have done. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Shiva said, you are all the sons of King Prachinabhari, and I do wish all good fortune unto you. I also know what you are going to do. And therefore I am visible to you just to show my mercy upon you. Responsibly, Lord Shiva said, you are all the sons of King Prachinabhari, and I wish all good fortune to you. I also know what you are going to do. And therefore I am visible to you, just to show my mercy upon you. By these words, Lord Shiva indicates that what the princes were going to do was known to him. It is a fact that they were going to worship Lord Vishnu by severe austerities and penance. Knowing this fact, Lord Shiva immediately became very pleased, as apparent by the next verse. This indicates that a person who is not yet a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but who desires to serve the Supreme Lord, receives the benedictions of the demigods, headed by the chief demigod, Lord Shiva. Thus a devotee of the Lord does not need to try to please the demigods separately. Simply by worshipping the Supreme Lord, a devotee can please all of them. Nor does he have to ask the demigods for material benedictions, for the demigods, being pleased with the devotee, automatically offer him everything that he needs. The demigods are servants of the Lord, and they are always prepared to help a devotee in all circumstances. Therefore, Srila Bhilapur Mangal Thakur said that if one has unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Lord, the goddess of liberation is ready to serve him, to say nothing of the gods of material opulences. Indeed, all the demigods are simply waiting for an opportunity to serve the devotee. Thus, there is no need for a devotee of Krishna to endeavor for material opulence or liberation. By being situated in the transcendental position of devotional service, he receives all the benefits of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Shuru vacha yuyam vedishira putra viditam vashtikyashitam anugrahaya vadramba eva me darshanam kritam. Lord Shiva said, you are the sons of King Prachinabhari, and I wish all good fortune to you. I also know what you are going to do, and therefore I am visible to you just to show my mercy upon you. Om agyanati manandasya agyananjana salakaya. Chak surun militam jena tasma ishvigrave maha sri chaitanamino visitam stapitam jena putale svayam rupa karamayam tadati svapadantikam. So Prabhupada is indicating that worship of Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Indra, Chandra, all the demigods, Lord Ganesh separately is unnecessary. Shankara Acharya recommended that his version of Mayavadism, that one should pick five gods or demigods to worship, Panchopasana. And he recommended Lord Shiva, he recommended Durga, he recommended Lord Vishnu, recommended Ganesh, recommended Lakshmi, and he gave options that one could also worship Lord Brahma if one wished to, and Surya. So this is the method of worship as recommended by Shankaracharya, the five Panchopasana deities. This is actually a form of non-worship of Krishna, because it means worshiping demigods of your choice, especially the recommended five. Prabhupada is making the point that because all the demigods are worshiping Lord Krishna or Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva is the greatest of all the Vaishnavas because he's worshiping, and he's steadily worshipping Krishna. Of course, he is not in the Vishnu Tattva category and shouldn't be worshipped separately except in relationship to Krishna as the Supreme Vaishnava. So Lord Shiva worship is condoned, and so is worship of Lord Ganesh under certain circumstances. In one letter, Prabhupada wrote a devotee and said that you can worship Ganesh separately if you're prepared to give me $400,000 every day. So it's not an easy thing to worship demigods separately. In fact, it's not recommended, but recommended to worship them as devotees of Krishna. As Prabhupada says, there's no need for a devotee of Krishna to endeavor for material opulence or liberation. At one point, Krishna himself was expounding Sankhya philosophy and worship of Karma Mimamsa, or that philosophy. That's one of the seven philosophies that are propounded by Hindus. And he was arguing with his father Nanda Maharaj in the Govardhana Leela that if we simply do our duty, then Lord Indra will be satisfied, and there is no need for us to worship separately. And then, of course, this led to worship of Lord Krishna, who was Govardhana Hill. We should just worship the hill and do our work. And indirectly, he was convincing the inhabitants of Braj to worship himself, or to worship the Govardhana Hill, who was Krishna himself. And Prabhupada mentions that there is no need for a devotee to endeavor for material opulence or liberation. In pure devotional service, one transcends those types of worship using karma or jnana, and the worship of bhakti or pure devotional service is considered to be the highest form of worship. And without endeavoring for liberation, as Bill Mungo points out, liberation is waiting, standing at our doorstep with folded hands. How can I serve you? Saying that to a devotee. And Bill Mungo was a great devotee of Krishna. His story is, briefly, that he became very attached to the opposite sex. And at one point, because his eyes were always misleading him, always leading him into temptation, he blinded himself voluntarily and resided, according to Srila Prabhupada's writings, in Vrindavan for 700 years. It's like a long time to live, but that's what Prabhupada said. And after some time, because he was simply chanting there at the precincts of Vrindavan, right at the edge of Vrindavan, Krishna began to manifest himself to him, and he came as a little boy and offered him milk, and then gradually Bilbamangal Thakur understood that that was Krishna. So he's famous for his Krishna Karnamrita, and especially this verse which says that if you actually become a pure Vaishnava or devotee of Krishna, then liberation will be automatically awarded to you. So at the end of this purport, where Prabhupada says that by being situated in the transcendental position, devotional service, one receives all the benefits of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Moksha is liberation, and that liberation automatically comes. Of course, Madhavacharya said that real liberation, as far as we understand in the Gaudiya Madhva Sampradaya, Gaudiya Madhva Brahma Sampradaya, is to attain to the lotus feet of Krishna. Jnana karma, jnana karma, janabritam, that it is free from jnana, free from karma. And that's pure devotional service. And when one attains to pure devotional service, then moksha, as it is generally known, just be somehow freed from this material world, somehow be freed from karma, somehow be freed from the reactions of the material world. That kind of liberation is automatically achieved. But on the higher plane, one obtains pure liberation, which is understanding and loving the lotus feet of the Lord. And so he says that all the benefits of dharma, or duty, or religion, artha, sense gratification, or karma, and kama, which means just the gross sense gratification. Artha also refers to economic development. One gets all these things. So how does it happen? Vyavasayat mikabudhir ekeha kuru nandana. It is stated in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, bahu shakha yantascha buddha yor vyavasayanam, that if one is one-pointed in one's worship of Krishna, then it is possible to obtain the lotus feet of the Lord. And if one is not in this consciousness of being singularly dedicated to Krishna, then it is a fact that one becomes very spread out or splayed out. Bahu shaka yanatascha. One's intelligence becomes many-branched. It is also said in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhogaishvarya Prasaptanam Taya Prakriti Chetasam. Vyavasayat Mikabuhir. It's the same verse, Vyavasayat Mikabuhir, which refers to getting intelligence from Krishna. One cannot actually develop pure devotional service. There's a Christian saying that it is more difficult for one to pass a camel through the eye of a needle than to go to heaven. So Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam Taya Prakriti Chetasam Vyavasayat Mikbhudur. Samado Sabhidiyate. It means that one cannot actually be free from the material world unless one is singularly pointed towards Krishna. The desire for sense gratification will remain in the heart. One will not be able to actually enjoy pure devotional service as long as that Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam, as long as that tendency, that desire to want to enjoy is there, it will not be possible. Samado Navidiyate, to engage in pure devotional service, because one will become bewildered by various forms of sense gratification by trying to enjoy the material world. So Prabhupada has written many times that in order to gain the spiritual world, to be free and get ultimate liberation, one has to be completely free from sense gratification. So Vasudeva Ksava Metiya may take Vahunam, may take many births to do this, to come to this point, but this is actually required for final liberation and pure liberation. One has to become freed from any desire. Even Prabhupada says a pinch of sense gratification, it has to be completely eradicated. So when one is completely pure in heart, completely pure in mind, it is at that time that one can attain the spiritual world. So pure devotional service is the cleansing process, the process by which all the unwanted, unsavory, unclean, garbage-like things in the mind become cleansed. And one who is able to engage in the service wholeheartedly becomes free from all the reactions of the karmic world, or the rules of karma, the inscrutable reactions of the material and spiritual worlds. And dharma, artha, karma, and moksha, which are generally striven for separately, become automatically obtained. Generally, the whole world is, especially at this particular time, is striving for artha, for economic development, and kama, for better sense gratification. So these two things are interdependent in the sense that if it is told to us over and over again that if we're successful in our economic development, we'll get better sense gratification. And if our aim is to gratify our senses more successfully, then we'll get somehow the means by which to do this, which means economic development. Everything is intertwined. So we see that the advertisements, that things that lure us, lowest common denominator, right, are always beautiful specimens of the opposite sex, to lure us to do anything, to buy washing machines, to buy things that aren't really even related to beautiful men or women. But they're there because they attract us. And conversely, if we get a better or bigger boat, car, airplane, or better skis, or whatever we like to do, it's understood that we're going to have better sense gratification. We're going to attract a more beautiful man or a more beautiful woman. So it is these two interdependent features that constitute what is being paraded in front of us almost nonstop. I know when we drive down the road, these billboards pass us every few seconds on some streets, and this is basically what they're telling us. So these are impressions. Even though we're supposed to be concentrating in the road, we're getting constantly input, all sorts of, every few seconds, from this side, from the right side, from the left side, about what we should buy, what we should like, how we can enjoy. So the spirit of enjoyment is very, very much prominent in the Western world. Without the spirit of enjoyment, it's not possible to gain things. And this may be very gross. It may be within the family. Prabhupada was telling how one
economist that he studied in school used to, I think his name was Marshall. Anyway, he used to talk about how they would hire, all the big firms would insist on hiring people that were family members, family men especially, because they weren't going to go anywhere, they weren't going to do something crazy. They were sort of trapped by the family, we might say, so to speak, because they were after artha in that way, and this would keep them shackled. So this is the tendency. And although this leads, it should lead, according to Karmakandia, it should lead, artha and kama should lead to dharma, it should lead to moksha. But what happens is, in today's world, and among in every part of the world, really, people who strive for these things separately end up getting no further, really, than sense gratification. That is, if their tendency is to fall, and the tendency of all of us is to fall. If they're a little more enlightened, they'll work up to dharma, to doing what is right, or doing their duty, following their svadharmas. And if they're a little more elevated, they'll want to renounce everything, to sort of give it up, and maybe go away and live somewhere, like in the Himalayas, maybe walk barefoot, or by a sacred tree, or lake, or in a cave, maybe, under the ground. So that's the version of liberation. And that's the reason why certain disciplines are very popular today, like Buddhism, for example. It subscribes to the fact that we can jagan mitya, we can say that the whole world is false. It's a kind of Mayavadism, but it doesn't claim Brahma Satya. It just claims to just give it up because it's not real. And everything that we're experiencing isn't really painful because it's not real. Therefore, it can be given up. So this philosophy, whether it's in the form of Buddhism or whatever it may be, there are other philosophies that say it's not real, but this makes for a very popular form of religion, so-called, because it's not real. And we can deny everything, everything of the senses, everything that happens to us, to say that it's not real. So this is very, very common. And when Shankaracharya came to expand his philosophy and said, when he wanted to add Brahma Satya to Jagan Mitra, Mitya, he said that, yeah, well, we can merge, and there is a God, and that God is unknowable to us, exactly what the personality is not existent, but we can merge into oneness, we can all become one, and there is God. So this was his mission, to reestablish the Vedas, to reestablish God in the impersonal sense, and he recommended Panchavasana worship. So people want to deny, they want to ignore, or they want to say, they want to say that there is nothing real. And Prabhupada is indicating here that a devotee of Krishna doesn't have to endeavor for any kind of liberation. This is considered a form of liberation, to consider that things aren't real, that they don't really exist, that they're all sort of false. But a devotee of Krishna uses everything in the service of Krishna. That was one of Srila Prabhupada's unique contributions to human society. Maybe it was his most unique contribution to human society. Because although many came before him expounding Eastern philosophy, they were basically saying that it was something different, something you had to do that was different. Whereas Prabhupada was saying you can use even those things which are ordinarily very degrading, full of ugra karma, destroying the finer sentiments of human beings, destroying the planet, so to speak, and they could be used for Krishna. And because he was saying that and not changing anything that went before, people began to follow. So it was his not changing anything that made for a following, that made for reality, and made for people reading the books of Krishna consciousness. So this verse also indicates that pure devotees should be worshipped, that pure devotees have a sense of what another devotee is like, and that they should guyamakati prachiti, that they should reveal themselves, reveal their minds to others. They should worship other devotees. They should accept worship from others. And they should develop intimacy, that they should reveal their minds. Prabhupada also writes that simply by worshiping the Supreme Lord, a devotee can please all of the demigods. So this is another form of Panchapasana and another form of delusion, that one can worship and please to get a good this or get a good that, get a good bank balance, to get a good reputation, to get good education, to get a good wife or husband, to have good luck. It's very common. People are very superstitious. Someone I noticed couldn't resist when we got this sign first put up outside this temple, writing Om on the with lipstick on the posts. It was real heavy, you know, real thick. So religion is a kind of superstition, we might say, whether it's Hinduism or Judaism or Muslimism, whatever it is. It's a kind of superstition. Superstition means something that's not real, but it's something that we believe in, something we think is going to bring us good luck. So all these kinds of symbols, sometimes it's a Jewish star, sometimes it's a crescent and a star. All these things are going to bring us good luck because it's like what they call the placebo effect. Is it? You sort of take a drug, and it may just be sugar, but it makes you feel good that you took it and you think you're going to get cured, so you get cured. And that's what a lot of psychologists say. Prabhupada said that we should demolish these psychological delusions. They say they're going to save us. They write so many books. They're by the thousands. They have degrees. They're experts. People write about them. He told back to God and people at one point that psychologists, religionists, philosophers, politicians, they're all promising that they're going to give us heaven, they're going to give us liberation, they're going to give us happiness. But actually these are faulty shelters. They don't last. They're only temporary. And then people become, after a while, they feel that they were cheated. They put faith in the psychologist, they put faith in that politician, put faith in that religionist, put faith in that scientist. That was the other group, scientists. And what has it done? Has it made them happy? Has it given them what they want? Have they achieved their goals by taking shelter of such people? In general, no. After some time, they realize that they were cheated. So Prabhupada, at one point, said that one of the missions of his writing, of his continuation of his writing back to God, it should be to expose all these false prophets that are promising so much health and happiness and wealth and beauty and fame and all those wonderful things that people strive for. That people work very hard, they study, and they memorize, and they learn, and they become so-called experts, and they promise that they're going to help, they're going to improve the quality of individual life, they're going to improve the quality of collective life, and it's just a sham because it doesn't work. So the demigod worship is also like that. Sometimes people were asking Prabhupada, well, why do so many people worship Lord Shiva anyway, if they're not getting, if it's not really the best form of worship, if they're not getting benefits? And one of the answers Prabhupada gave was that Lord Shiva gives them quick benedictions just to get rid of them, because he doesn't want to give these kind of false benedictions, but he does it just because he wants to get it over with. So it's, and Prabhupada went on to say that it was a kind of bribery, the kind of bribery, that they give him things. It's like Vikasura, right? He was so dedicated, he was cutting his own flesh, and Lord Shiva thought, oh, I got to do something for this guy. And he ended up trying to kill Lord Shiva, and he had to take shelter of Lord Vishnu to be saved. So, and then people worship Ganesh for money, people worship Katyayani for a good husband, people worship Lord Indra for good weather, and so on. When in 19, I don't know, I think it was 42, when the Japanese were bombing Calcutta and the city was becoming abandoned, people were packing up their bags and they were leaving, Prabhupada stayed there, and he said, actually this is an indication of the fact that it takes living entities to make matter meaningful, to make it useful, because buildings that would ordinarily rent, or apartments that would rent for, say, 1,000 rupees were renting for 100 rupees, or buildings that were renting for 100 rupees were renting for 10 rupees. So, like, everything was devalued to about 10% of what it ordinarily was, because there was no people. that the landlords couldn't rent their apartments because no one wanted to rent them. So all of a sudden it went down, 90%, everything. And Prabhupada used that as an example to show that unless the living entities are present, there is no value in matter. It's kind of an interesting example how that happens. And he was asking on one, I read this one lecture where he was asking devotees in LA to stand up and answer his questions because he didn't have any questions after the class. And one of the questions he asked was, why is spirit considered to be apareyam? Why is it considered to be superior? Why is that word used, apareyam? Why is it superior to matter? Well, why is there para and apara prakriti? There is para. There's Bahiranga Shakti, Antaranga Shakti. Okay, there's two different. There's the internal energy and there's dull matter. Well, why is spirit considered to be superior? So devotees gave different answers to the questions. Well, spirit is eternal, doesn't end. Spirit is more subtle, it can't be dried or cut. Gave all those different arguments that are in the Bhagavad Gita. Can't be wetted, can't be dried by the wind, can't be moistened, and so on. They gave other answers about spirit, why spirit was superior. What is the nature of spirit? And anyway, no one really gave the answer the Prabhupada was looking for, and I couldn't figure it out either, but it was that spirit can manipulate matter. Spirit can move matter. Spirit can cause matter to grow upon itself. And therefore, it's superior because it controls matter. Just like if you have an apartment, you control what the apartment looks like. If you are alive, you control your body. If you're not there as a soul, then the body is just dead matter. So it was an interesting thing that Prabhupada gave, an interesting analogy. Why apareyam is why it is called superior, because that which is superior controls that which is inferior. Very interesting. So this is the situation of the Supreme Lord and the demigods. The demigods are subservient, they're servants of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord controls them. So this is the essence, in one sense, what Prabhupada is saying here, what this verse is all about. The Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Lord Indra, Lord Lakshmi, Lord Saraswati, all of them are servants of the Supreme Lord. And if the superior master, if the real master, is worshipped, then you have nothing to worry about. Lord Indra isn't going to make life miserable for you. Lord Shiva is not going to make life miserable for you. So even though they may be like Ashutosh, easily pleased like Lord Shiva, even though you may get benedictions from Lord Ganesh, really, unless one takes shelter of Krishna, then these benedictions may not last. They're certainly imperfect, and they aren't going to last in the long term. Therefore, Krishna worship is considered the highest form. If we have to worship somebody, let us worship Krishna. If we have to have Lord Ganesh outside of our house, a picture of Lord Shiva on the wall, that's okay. But let's see them as servants of the Supreme Lord. And then our worship becomes perfect. So, we'll stop there. Shuru vacha yuyam vedeshita putra viditam vashchikirshitam anugrahaya padramba eva me darshanam kritam. Lord Shiva said, you are all the sons of King Prachinabari, and do wish all good fortune to you. I also know what you are going to do, and therefore I am visible to you just to show my mercy upon you. So, any comments? Comments? Yes, we're going. Definitely, the spirit of enjoyment makes the intelligence many-branched, because when we have the spirit of enjoyment, enjoyment is not within. Bhagavad Gita tells us in the fifth chapter, I think the boys are doing something about this in their video, that the real happiness is within. That when one's happiness is within, when one's happiness is inward, that person is actually the true mystic and is liberated in the Supreme and ultimately attains the Supreme. Not just any kind of liberation, but liberated in the Supreme. One whose happiness is within, who is joyful, and who is active and joyful, and whose aim is inward, is actually the perfect mystic. So that enjoyment is very singular. It's bahushaka, it's ekeha kuru nandana, described in the Bhagavad Gita. Happiness from without, based on the spirit of enjoyment, is, as we can see, very many-branched. It's, if you see in a magazine a particular new kind of computer, then the tendency is to, I'll get that computer. Instead of having a 200 or 300 megahertz processor, I'll have a 500 or 600 megahertz processor. And then there's a very interesting movie that I heard about. I've got to go and see it. It's worth spending $20 for. I'll go, because then I'm going to enjoy myself. And there's just a really great party happening Saturday night, and all my friends are going, and I'm going to go because I'm going to have fun. I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to really get into the spirit of enjoyment. Or I'm going to take a walk down the Great Falls. That's kind of nice. It's going to feel good to do that. I mean, that's a little more in the mode of goodness. But there are all types of enjoyment. One time I was walking down there and someone was running by, jogging, and he said, you know, he stopped, and he saw me, and he said, you know, I like to come down here. And he pointed over to a big buck, a deer, male deer. That's why I like to come down here. You can't see that anywhere in Washington. But, he really was enjoying, really was happy that he could come down there. And that's okay, but that's the mode of goodness, and we want to transcend the mode of goodness and come to pure goodness, Shuddha-sattva. So this spirit of enjoyment tends to be many-branched. The spirit of enjoyment internally, internal happiness, that's pure enjoyment. When it's internalized, then it's ekeha kuru nandana, then it's singular. So that kind of internal happiness is what devotees experience. Otherwise, they're driven and pulled by the eyes, the ears, the nose. If we see something wonderful, we want to go there. If we smell something wonderful, I'll go into that restroom because it smells really good. Down on, what is it, Adam? I forget the name of that area. Adam's Morgan. There's all different restaurants you can go into. There's like 50 different restaurants. And so if it smells good, senses drag in there. If it sounds good, they're playing a nice record outside that record shop, I'll buy that. I'll spend it on get one of those CDs. So that's it's just like the analogy is given in the Bhagavatam. The men used to have many wives, and each one was pulling, come into my room, now come into my room. So senses are like that. They're pulling us. Spirit of enjoyment. I don't know if that addresses your question, but it's probably not the only thing that causes us to be many-branched, but it certainly is. I mean, we sometimes, many-branched can also refer to more subtle kinds of enjoyment. In the mind, we're not necessarily, it is a kind of spirit of enjoyment, but it's very interesting, it's very very inspiring, it's fun to solve mathematical problems. it's fun to memorize many different philosophical points. It's enjoyable to know the history in detail of the world, or of a country, or of a city. It's enjoyable. So these are all different things that we can become also many-branched and enjoy materially in that way, within our minds. So there's so many wonderful things to enjoy. But they don't lead to ultimate liberation. So therefore, the inner happiness is what we're striving for. Ekehakuna, singular inner happiness. And that's not to deny that we're going to have variety, because to enjoy with Krishna means the greatest variety, because in the spiritual world there's every variety of every possible entity, every possible taste, every possible activity, every possible emotion, and more than we know. It's all in the spiritual world. So that singular meditation on Krishna, that happiness within, is not just sitting up in a cloud on a playing with the cherubs and singing songs, and that would be pretty monotonous. That's what people think heaven is like. I mean, they tend to think that heaven is kind of like that, that you just sit up in a cloud and hang out with the cherubs, play on lyres, that's it. What makes Krishna consciousness very interesting is the variegatedness of the spiritual world. It's so wonderful and so varied. And it's endless. The enjoyment and the variety is endless. That world is something we don't read about very often. And therefore we read Prabhupada's books, because we know there's another dimension in life which is full of enjoyment. It helps. Yes. We can't pattern our lives after the gopis, because they're on a much higher spiritual level than we are. Like sometimes people think they're like Bill Clinton, you know, they have a nice car, they have a lot of friends, go to nice parties, they have prestige. But nobody can really quite be on that level. I mean, he's got, you know, like supreme power. So similarly, and that's a gross example, one can't imitate Prabhupada or the gopis or any pure devotee, a demigod, because they're on a different level than we're on. So that's one point. So they have a right to do things that we couldn't do. And another point is that because they were great lovers of Krishna, because actually they, although they were sometimes worshipping Katyayani, they were always thinking about Krishna, or Krishna brought them to that stage when they weren't, by taking away their clothes, for example, by disappearing from them in the rasa dance. So he was always bringing them to a higher and higher level of Krishna consciousness. Even though they're on the highest level, he was bringing them to higher and higher levels. Because in the spiritual world, there's, unlike the material world, we have, you can't be more perfect. You're either perfect or you're not perfect. But you can't be more perfect or most perfect. But in the spiritual world, you can be more perfect and most perfect. So Krishna is in a constant habit of bringing the gopis to higher and higher levels. Even though they're already on the highest level, but he brings them higher. So it is stated in the Chaitanya-Charitamrita that, I think it's in the instructions of Sanatana Goswami in the Majjhalila, that one, the love between Radha and Krishna, for example, is increasing millions of times every second. So we can't conceive of even a million, what to speak of a million times every second. So they're in a higher platform, and already, and Krishna is bringing them constantly and constantly to a higher platform. So they can sort of do what they want, really. Like Krishna can do it, he's fully independent. Krishna's two Bhagavan, so he can do whatever he wants. And he never does wrong. Even though he incited Arjuna to become angry and kill his relatives, that's not wrong, because he's God. We don't say that's wrong. Any more than we say a high court judge is wrong and sentences someone to death, because the person deserved to go. What to speak of God? We don't even condemn the judge. What to speak of Krishna? What to speak of the gopis? Does that help? Okay. Lovely.
Maharaj, you talked about being freed of material desires. Until we do that, we are not eligible to go back to the spiritual world. So how can we practically get ourselves free from the anarthas and material desires in this age?
Practical devotional service is the practical way that Prabhupada gave us, that the great sages have given us, especially Prabhupada, that if we engage in non-stop in devotional service, then our minds will also, in our body and mind, then our words and our mentality will also become purified as we engage in the acts of devotion, wherever they may be. It could be deity worship, it could be donating, it could be cleansing the temple, it could be having gatherings of Krishna. So many things that we have to do, they're necessary for pure devotional service. And although there's no guarantee, we can certainly hope that the goal will become purified in time by just continuing the process as intensely as possible and meditating on Krishna's feet and meditating on how to better serve him, how to please him. That way we'll get the purification that we seek. Prabhupada said of one of his devotees who passed away, that he's gone back to the spiritual world. So it's possible. It's possible to do. It's not guaranteed, but it's not an impossible task. It can be done. And the method is just to keep constantly busily engaged in serving Krishna somehow or other, whether no matter what it is. And then our hearts, our anarthas, our impurities gradually get boiled off, so to speak. So the more we turn up the heat of Krishna consciousness, the more we get purified, and the more we become dear to Krishna. And hopefully, in time, by the end of our life, we'll have reamed out all the anarthas and unwanted things in our hearts and become pure devotees, go back to Krishna. But that's the practical answer, the practical method to engage in what Prabhupada called practical devotional service. And this would be the best method to keep busy, to keep engaged, and to keep our minds fixed on Krishna, to mold our lives so that we can never forget Him in whatever we do, eating, walking, sleeping. Surround ourselves with Krishna at all times. Have something else?
No.
Okay. Any other points to raise?